Welcome back, listeners, to Faith in Action. So glad that you are joining us on Channel 88.1 FM. And I want to thank my guest from the previous two segments, Greg Romig, who's an instructor at Western Iowa Tech Community College here in Sioux City. And he spoke at length about giving us a better understanding of what a virus is, what vaccines are, and I so am grateful for him for taking time out of his busy schedule to come on the air and enlighten us about information that we really should have at our fingertips. And so now with me in the studio is another friend of mine, and yes, listeners, I shameless plug, I bring in a lot of my friends. Thank goodness I have really a lot of friends and acquaintances, having been in the field of journalism forever, it seems. So with me in the studio is Dr. Michael Young. He is, faculty member of the residency program with the Siouxland Residency Program here in Sioux City. That was hard to say. So welcome to the studio, Dr. Young.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me.
It's great to be here. It's great to be anywhere, pretty much.
Yep, it's always a great day to be alive.
Absolutely. So tell the listeners a little bit about yourself.
I grew up in a family in Emory, South Dakota. I went to Catholic grade school in Emory, South Dakota. I went to college at St. John's University in Collegeville, Minnesota, and did my medical school in South Dakota and my residency in family medicine here in Sioux City.
Okay. And when did you come to Sioux City then?
In 1980, I came here as an intern in the residency program, and I have continued my entire medical career at the same location. 41 years, if you might use the math.
I do use the math. And we were chatting while we were off air that we have this commonality. When I was expecting my number four son, and there was 5 years between number three and number four, and my husband and I thought we should go back and maybe take some childbirth classes because we thought maybe something had changed. And there you were with your wife, Peggy, and you were expecting your first son.
That's right. My oldest is your youngest, the same age. So I have four sons, Matthew, David, John, and Patrick, and they're all out of the home. They're we're very thankful they're educated, many in Catholic institutions, and God is very merciful. They're doing very well.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. I thought for a minute you were saying we're very glad they're all out of the home.
Yeah,
because kind of that's the way I felt with my four, too.
Thank you.
So you have been in this community for a long time. You've kind of seen what's going on with the COVID. Maybe share with the listeners some of your experiences with what has been going on with the virus and what you have witnessed in seeing patients.
Yes, things have changed a lot. You know, we've been dealing with this now over a year and a half. Initially, there was a lot of unknowns out there. You know, there were visions of Ebola and SARS viruses or swine flu or bird flu and the flu of 1917 that killed, a third of the population, things like that. And so we didn't really know what to expect. And there was an anticipation that the COVID pandemic would overwhelm our system, our healthcare professionals, the hospitals, our ability to take care of them. So there was a lot of fear, but also a lot of unknowns that we were dealing with on a day-to-day basis. As time went on, we got more experience, and the healthcare community and the community all rallied to be able to curb the curve. You know, as they said initially, we needed to just flatten the curve and then we'd be okay. And then we needed a virus vaccine that would, so we're dealing with a little bit of a changing target sometimes, but that's how medicine is. The half-life of medical knowledge is very short. you know, and we learn, and we, that's kind of what science is. We learn from the past and hopefully predict the future.
And it seems in the early days where we were talking about a lot of unknowns that a lot of people were succumbing to the disease because they had pre-existing conditions. And maybe you could address what would those pre-existing conditions be? And listeners might think to themselves, well, I need to be a little more cautious because I would fall into that category.
Yeah, that's a very good observation. And it actually has run true. And we've seen, even in past years with just the influenza itself, it did seem to take the vulnerable, the people with underlying conditions, and they were anywhere from being overweight to have diabetes, high blood pressure, heart disease, emphysema, any type of underlying immune compromised condition, initially were thought to be the only ones that were really going to be significantly impacted by this. But as time went on, we started seeing fairly healthy people getting this and succumbing to this. And so it did raise our concern that, you know, we're taking care of these people. And if we get it, you know, we might be one of those healthy people that succumb to it. Because we had to conserve, protective equipment and things like that, initially we restricted the care of these people to very few individuals. Even the physicians who were caring for them many times did it virtually. And so the real face-to-face people were the x-ray techs and the lab techs and the nurses who were in the same room with the patient, but many times the physicians were doing this remotely. Most of it to save the providers from catching it and then not being available to the rest of the patients.
And the contagious aspect of it just almost seemed to be astonishing.
Yeah, and just like a lot of contagious diseases, we know it spread in lots of different ways, you know, by hand contact, by breathing, by inanimate objects. We think that all the things that we have done probably all added together to help curb some of the curve on the transmission. We do know that the hand washing, the social distancing, the staying home when you were sick did help prevent almost all of the influenza deaths that we would usually have. And we even noticed that the condition called RSV for children was almost non-existent this winter. And the only thing that we could attribute that to is all of those measures that were being done to prevent COVID transmission were also working for those conditions. So there was no one thing that I think you could point your finger at, like people will say, well, that was because of masks or that was because of social distancing. I think it was a combination of just everybody being extra careful, and probably washing your hands was probably as important as masks and distancing was.
And now that we've kind of gone into yet another variant of it, what kinds of things, and I like the hand washing idea, mm-hmm. I've always been a big fan of that, but what kinds of things should people be doing to ensure that they will be healthy? I mean, obviously, mm-hmm. you can't avoid everything. I mean, we are not on this planet forever, and someday we're going to probably die. But in the meantime, what can we do to keep ourselves healthy?
Yeah, that's a good point, because all of these viruses do attack the people who have weaknesses in their immune system. And so just as important as maybe wearing a mask might be is taking care of your diabetes, exercising, taking your blood pressure medicines, eating right, getting enough rest, drinking a lot of water, you know, washing your hands. If you're sick, stay home, you know, things that are sort of obvious health practices. Those things can help you if you do get one of these infections to avoid, you know, more serious complications to them.
And it seems that there's a lot of confusion as to what exactly are the symptoms of this. I mean, you know, especially where we live in Iowa, Nebraska, South Dakota, we serve the tri-state area. And this time of year, we got the pollen, we got the allergies, we got the smoke coming in from California. We got now the farmers in the fields doing things. And sometimes it's a little difficult to know if my sniffles or my sinus drainage might be the start of something. So what kinds of things should I be looking for?
Yeah, that's an excellent question. Well, mainly because we assume everybody with any symptom could have COVID. We remind them to stay home, to avoid contact with people if you're sick in any way. It could be a headache. Could be a cough, you know, taste changes, nausea, fever, even like diarrhea and things, a rash. We've seen all variations on those things. So, you know, call your healthcare provider if you're concerned. Get tested. We think testing does help us identify those that are at risk and need to be quarantined, but also those contacts of those people to limit their distancing. If you, we think testing is probably helpful mainly to identify the people who could be the super spreaders in certain events. So as a healthcare provider and other healthcare providers, we have to make sure we're not spreading it to others. So we have to protect ourselves. You know, I've been vaccinated. We wear masks, but we also, not everybody is in our same profession that, you know, if they want to stay home and work from home for the next 5 years, they might be able to do that. But if we're seeing the public regularly, then we have to do a few more proactive things like that.
And that would make sense. And what's going to make sense right now, listeners, as you know, if you tune into this program, is we have to take a short break where we give a shout out to our underwriters, do some public service announcements. But really, please stay tuned because we have a lot more information to share with you, and we will be right back.